Working for Student Success.
Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Monday, May 20th. We're going to take items a little bit out of order. First of all, I'm announcing that two bills will be carried over to tomorrow. House Bill 3135, House Bill 3136 will not have work sessions today. They will be carried over to tomorrow. We will do short, I hope pretty quick, work sessions on the other two bills, and then we will move to the public hearings. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 3137.
Chair Nathanson, the House Bill 3137, you heard it first on March 27th, and this basically allows for the adjustment and administration of when the tax and the filing occur and align the two together. You have a dash one amendment. The dash one amendment basically changes the implementation date until January 1st, 2020.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, I move the dash one amendment be adopted into HB 3137.
Representative Marsh moves the dash A1 amendment into House Bill 3137. Any discussion? Objections? Motion passes.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 3137 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Marsh moves House Bill 3137 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objections? Motion passes. Representative Marsh will be the carrier for 3137. No other business on that bill. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3137. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 3138.
And Chair Nathanson, House Bill 3138 is still in its original format, and 3138, and what it intended to do is primarily allow for the rentals that are less than 30 days that were previously in the law exempt from being reported, allows for them to be. This is as a result of the change in technology. You have the online companies who are making those rentals. However, they're for the owner, it's less than 30 days, and this allows them to treat everything the same rather than starting to try to parse out, which is less than 30 days total versus more than 30 days total.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 3138 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Marsh moves House Bill 3138 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Yes, Representative Reschke.
Thanks, and I don't know if anybody has an answer to this question, but just wondering why the TOT exemptions for short-term rental platforms like Airbnb, but not for all intermediaries. What the thought behind that was.
Mr. Malik, would you like to respond?
Representative Reschke, I think the what this basically allows is for anybody under the umbrella of the online companies to have that type of treatment as 3138. And I think it preserves the small proprietor type if they rent to, you know, their people visiting them from out of state for a few days or so. So I think all online companies are treated the same.
Okay. Representative Findley, did you have a question?
Well, I did. Thank you, Madam Chair. The transient lodging intermediary is the only thing that gives me pause. I mean, is that only a few companies, or is that if I have a house in that I rent out via a website that is not a transient lodging intermediary, do I, am I exempted from that or not, or do I have to pay that? I don't understand why the specific, because I don't know what transient lodging intermediary specifically means, how deep it goes.
Representative Marsh?
Thank you. There was, thank you for the question. We went through a process of defining intermediaries in last year's 4120. Basically, what we're trying to do in this bill is if you're renting out your hunting lodge and you are, you know how many days in the year you're going to be renting that lodge for, you're not forced to pay transient lodging tax. But as soon as you hand, when you hand that responsibility for the rental over to an intermediary, those entities that are then in charge of collection, there's no longer a way for us to be able to determine whether you're limited to 30 days because you may be using several intermediaries. And so what we want to do is simply say, in the case where an intermediary is the rental agent, then the 30 days limit doesn't apply because we don't have a way to actually calculate those the number of days.
One quick follow-up. Let me use an example. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. Like the Embarcadero in Newport. Are they an intermediary, and are they exempt or non-exempt?
I don't think I can answer that because I don't think I know what they are.
It's not my intent to put you on the spot. No, I apologize for that. So that's my only concern is I don't know that there's a good definition for that.
There is a specific definition for intermediary.
Okay.
Maybe, do you want?
Then I should have read it further. So I'm fine.
Do you want Wendy to?
We do have someone with us who can explain it quickly for us. Ms. Johnson.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Representative Finley, Representative Marsh is correct. There's a statute that defines intermediary, and it has to be an entity that facilitates the transaction. So your own personal website wouldn't count because you're not facilitating on behalf of someone else. So this is intended to cover the Expedias, the Travelocities, the Sun River when they're renting out for multiple homes. So those facilitators of a rental, they don't want to count to 30 because you actually may be using two or three, you know, an Airbnb and a VRBO. So this would say we're not going to count to 30. If you're using an intermediary, the tax will begin immediately. If you rent yourself, that 30-day exception still applies.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm good.
Thank you. Any other questions or discussions on 3138? We have a motion to move this to the floor. Any objections? Motion passes. Representative Marsh will be the carrier. There's no other business on 3138. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3138. We will now move to public hearings. We'll take those in the order they're printed. I'm opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 769.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. Senate Bill 769 deals with a program that relieves property owners of solar property owners of property tax, but instead they pay a payment in lieu of tax, and that program is already in existence. And this measure would align those payments with the process that the counties already have for collecting and distributing property taxes so that the payment in lieu of taxes and property taxes would fall into the same system.
Okay, thank you. We have one person signed up to testify on this bill, Eric Kanzler.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, Eric Kanzler representing the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. We brought this bill. It was sponsored at our request by Senator Taylor. And as Jamie said it quite succinctly and accurately, this is a way of aligning the administration of payment in lieu of taxes for utility scale solar projects with the existing property tax system. Pilots were established via legislation in 2015, and what they allow for is a voluntary opportunity for utility scale solar developers and counties, should both parties agree, to set a term for uniform payments in lieu of central assessment property taxes. And so what you would do is you would multiply the nameplate capacity of solar electricity generation in megawatts by $7,000, and you would compute an annual payment. So the county and the solar developer, again, if both parties wanted to, could mutually agree at the outset on a length of time and in a set amount to pay every year. What this would do would provide uniform payments, predictable, perfectly predictable payments, instead of a depreciating and somewhat unpredictable schedule that would otherwise come with the ad valorem property tax methodology. So one element of this in 2015 was that, and we're actually not sure why this was the case, but a separate process was established for how you would do the administration, separate time frames, separate collection procedures, separate distribution of revenue to the taxing districts. It's not awful, but it doesn't work that well. It's a little bit clunky, and it seemed to us that it would be better for everybody if we simply move that process into the property tax system. So that is what the bill does. Over in the Senate, we worked, we vetted the bill with AOC, with the Department of Revenue, with Renewable Northwest, and with OSEA. Renewable Northwest and OSEA checked in, I believe, with a number of independent utility scale solar developers. We didn't come back with any objections. The bill passed out without dissent from the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee and off the floor. Since then, we identified a small technical fix with our technical fix bill. So we will, and I have a conversation with the parties going on right now, and a note into the drafter to get a fix hopefully established here in short order. I sent an email in for the record this morning describing what that would do. In effect, what happens now and what would be proposed under the bill is that you set the terms of the pilot up front, and then every year there would be something called an annual request for computation. Because while the amount per megawatt is the same, if the capacity of the project changes over time, there ought to be a regular check-in to update that. So if someone reduces the amount of power generated or increases the amount of power generated, you would take that new power, you'd multiply it by 7,000, and you'd have a new overall payment, even though the rate was the same. So in reviewing the bill, since it came out of the Senate, we've identified that one of the sections of the bill is worded incorrectly and raises a couple questions. In effect, the bill could be construed as requiring an application every year instead of a request for computation, which is not the intention. The intention is you set it once up front. And so we've talked to the assessors and the department have talked through this. We believe there's a very simple fix that would make it even easier than we thought it would be. We have to vet it with the industry representatives and AOC itself. But what we think needs to happen is every year the utility scale project would report its nameplate capacity to the Department of Revenue in their annual statement, which is an existing process. The DOR would send assessors the relevant capacities via the utility tax roll, which is an existing process. And then the assessors would simply multiply that capacity by 7,000, come up with the number, put it on the tax roll, send it to the solar project owner. Voila, a simple fix. Again, the bill is not drafted that way. We can hopefully handle that very quickly. And so I hope to be back with you with an amendment. And our intention is that it would be consensus that. There would be no objection. If it turns out that there are objections, I think we'll work to resolve those before asking you to consider moving anything. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions? Thank you for being here.
Hi, thank you.
There is no one else signed up to testify on this bill. Do you have any final comments? Okay. I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 769, and we'll look forward to possibly seeing an amendment suggested for us. Before we move to the next public hearing, Committee Representative Smith has joined us now. Without objection, I'd like to ask for Representative Smith's vote on House Bills 31, 37, and 38. Is there objection to that? Thank you. Representative Smith, how do you vote?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, on both.
On 3137 and 3138. Thank you. I'm opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 193A.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Senate Bill 193A temporarily extends the apportionment method for interstate broadcasters that we're currently using for tax year 2019. It also requires LRO and consultation with Department of Revenue to study these apportionment methods based on some uncertainty that has existed previously. So for a little bit of background, in 2014, legislation changed Oregon from an apportionment method that was based on the share of viewers in Oregon, which is called audience factor apportionment, to a method based on the domicile of customers. And this is called domicile factor apportionment. This temporary legislation was in place until 2016 when LRO was tasked with writing a report. Based on the findings of that report, there are still areas of uncertainty. The report was inconclusive, and there are a number of ongoing court cases trying to clear up some of this uncertainty. And so this temporary extension kind of provides some time hopefully during which that will get cleared up some.
Thank you. I have two people signed up to testify. How about you both come up now? John Powell and Melissa?
Attack.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing the Motion Picture Association of America. With me is Melissa Patak, who understands this issue better than I ever will. And I'm just going to turn it over to Melissa and let her explain our current position. The bill comes to you from a unanimous vote in committee and on the floor of the Senate.
Great. Thank you, John. Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, Vice Chairs Finley and Marsh, and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Patak. I'm Vice President for State Government Affairs at the Motion Picture Association of America. Our member companies are the owners of most all of the major television broadcast networks and most of the national cable program networks currently operating in the U.S. We support SB 193, I guess it's SB 193A, which continues the customer location or customer domicile method of apportioning the income of national broadcast companies and national cable program companies for one additional year. I will briefly highlight the reasons to continue this method of apportionment for the broadcasters. First, it is market sourcing for broadcasters. Oregon enacted market sourcing for all Oregon businesses in 2017. The customer location apportionment method taxes broadcasters on their market. Their customers, advertisers based in Oregon, and cable and satellite operators, as well as local TV stations who license the programming made by the broadcasters. This apportionment method, which has been the law since 2014, accurately reflects the way income is earned by the broadcasters. Second, it provides clarity and consistency to both the taxpayer and the Department of Revenue. Under customer location apportionment, the information about broadcasters' revenue is contained in their own books and records and does not rely on information that needs to be obtained by a third party and in many instances is not available to the taxpayer, the broadcaster. This apportionment method minimizes controversy by not looking through to the customers of the broadcaster's customers. Third, it is the modern method for taxing these national companies. Customer location apportionment has been adopted in several states since Oregon adopted it in 2014. Rhode Island, Tennessee, Texas, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Kentucky. Other states that have adopted it before Oregon include Michigan, Illinois, and Florida. And it takes into account the direction into which broadcasting is moving, namely streaming directly to subscribers who are the direct customers of the broadcaster. The bill, as it was amended in the Senate, also includes a provision for the LRO to report on the customer location apportionment method, and we are happy to work with the LRO on this report. Taxing national broadcast and cable networks on the basis of their customers, advertisers, licensees, and direct subscribers creates a fair and rational tax system. For these reasons, I respectfully urge the committee to approve SB 193A and continue the customer location method of apportionment. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Rush.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This extension is just for 1 year, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And
it,
the reason for just 1 year?
I think there was consensus for 1 year, and I think also a sense that this needed to be further examined now that it's been in effect since 2014. There may be, there's more years to look at in terms of understanding how it works for the Department of Revenue and the LRO.
Let's hear from Legislative Revenue Office also.
I would just add that I think part of the intention behind this extension is that there's ongoing litigation. And so until we know how those court cases turn out, it's difficult to put a revenue impact on this piece of legislation. And depending on the court cases and those outcomes, it could be positive or negative. And so part of the uncertainty there is just trying to make sure that the committee has an accurate reflection of this, whether it's a loss or a gain.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, our capable staff addressed the issue I had. Thank you. Okay.
Any other questions or discussion? Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
There's no other business to discuss on this bill, so I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 193A. There's no other business in front of us today. We are adjourned.